You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This is the press conference extra. I'm Andy Heaton, ahead of Sheffield United versus Liverpool at Bramall Lane tomorrow, and I'm joined this week to reflect on Jürgen's press conference by Mike Van Gaal again and John Gibbons. Guys, welcome to the show. Before we go in, John, we were just chatting there with FSA Award last night. Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, it was good fun. Yeah, we didn't win, unfortunately. Got beat by Arsblog, who've got a bit of a habit of pipping us in these, actually. But listen, as long as Liverpool finish above them in the table that matters at the end of the season, we'll be sort of fine with that. He did make reference to it, Jürgen, didn't he? And I segue there to sort of 2 points behind Arsenal at the moment. I think we were a couple of votes behind them, that was it. But listen, yeah, nice one to everyone who voted for us. We had a nice time, a bit stressful on the trains and stuff like that. But back in one piece, I feel like I'm back in lockdown a little bit. I'm in my little girl's nursery, which is where I did shows when it was my little boy's nursery. For about 6 months, so I'm getting flashbacks of things to talk about because there's no football. But we've got actual football to talk about today, so it'll be a little bit better.
I mean, all I'd say is Pacino didn't win an Oscar until Sense of a Woman, and that was kind of like because he should have won like all the ones before that anyway. So, yeah. You know, I'm fine with it.
100%.
Okay. So, Jürgen's give his press conference today. Touched on quite a few things, really interesting on a couple of players, but we'll start with his comments around Queef, who's been under the spotlight a little since the game the other night, conceding 3 goals. And talk about backing your man, he couldn't be more effusive about Keller, could he, Mike?
Yeah, I think he backed him, and I think it's important he did because he knows that he's going to have to rely on a player, not just in the league games that Alisson's out, but also the cup competitions as well. And I think ultimately, how the manager judges a goalkeeper is slightly different to how the rest of us judge a goalkeeper. Because I remember when Adrian stepped in for Alisson in the 1920 season and he was under so much scrutiny. I think he makes a mistake in his very first start against Southampton that season. And the manager backs him and just says, look, when it comes to what my goalkeeper does, sometimes it's about the players around him as well. And I think with Keller, what he said is, you know, he's doing a lot of stuff I want a goalkeeper to do with the ball at his feet really, really well. So look, I think the manager, there's a reason why we wanted to keep him at the club. The manager knows that this is a goalkeeper. When it comes to backup goalkeepers, I can't think of many teams that have a backup goalkeeper as good as ours. You know, so we are in a lucky position. I think, yes, he hasn't been as convincing this season as he has been in previous seasons when he stepped in. But I don't think he's been a disaster. So I think, look, you know, happy the manager has shown some confidence in him. And I'm hoping that Keller can respond to that confidence with a really good performance tomorrow against Sheffield United.
To ask you, if you don't mind, can you explain what he meant? Because when he was talking about the second goal, he was talking about, we want our keepers doing that. We want our keepers being front foot. I could tell he was backing him, but I didn't know exactly what he meant. So you could speak goalkeeper. What was he saying?
So what he was basically saying in theory is that as the first player makes the header before Tete gets a touch, Queeves anticipating Tete taking a touch and then hitting it. So he's trying to close the space, make the gap between him and the ball as narrow as possible. And I kind of understand that in theory. Look, I mean, I don't want to be too harsh, but it's an error. But what I did like about it is, and it's very rare for Jürgen to go into any kind of technical detail, but the line about he spoke to his goalie coaches and Alisson, and they were like, no, he's tried this, this is why he's done that, and give it context, which I thought was, you know, it was good and it was well thought out, and he's kind of tried to give detail to an answer to justify what he's saying, which is sound, and he's right about all the other bits, like, you know, with distribution, apart from one straight little back pass just after the goal, I think. But apart from that, his distribution was sound. His positioning's generally okay. I mean, all the bits around, I'm trying not to sound like I'm damning him with fake praise, all the bits around goalkeeping, I think he's excellent at. I think he's A1-er. And I think that there's an element with this one as well, Matty John, and I'll go to you on this, and we've seen it with so many countless goalkeepers. Pepe Reina was great at it, and Alisson's great at it. If they make a mistake, you just get on with it. They put it in a box. And in my head, it's kind of, it can go one of two ways, whether it's like some goalkeepers make a mistake and they go, right, that's my mistake. Don't, I've got rid of it now. I'm sound now. That's it. It's off the way. Whereas, because it's such a focused position, you've got other goalkeepers, which we've seen before, where make one mistake and you can see it playing in the mind and playing over and playing over. And to me, it's kind of case of, can he put it in a box? Just forget about it. What do you think?
Yeah, and that'll be the key, and it'll be all eyes on him on Wednesday and then into Saturday, because he's going to play, and that's the other thing. You know, the manager backs him, but he sort of has to, really, because Alisson's not going to be around. We don't think until Manchester United. It was good news that he's making good progress, but you know, he's not going to be available for Wednesday, and it'd be a shock if he's starting again on Saturday. So he sort of has to back him. You know, really. You know, it's either that or throw Adjian in, isn't it? Or, you know, one of the younger keepers, you know, even younger than Kelleher, which you know, is unlikely. And so he has to come out and do it. How he did it was interesting. It was interesting hearing your explanation. And, you know, it basically seemed to me, even, you know, listening to it, was he saying basically he's doing the right things. And I think managers would always, you know, forgive a player if they're doing the right things and making a mistake rather than sort of doing the wrong things. And that's the case for any position, really, isn't it? If they're doing, you know, as they've been coached in this instance, and they're doing sort of what you're asking them to do, and then you end up looking a little bit silly, you know, for whatever reason, then that just sort of happens. And that's not to say that, obviously, you know, you don't want maybe his reactions to be a little bit better when something else happens, but at the same time, you know, I think he'd rather he was doing the right things, and they'll be telling him that, you know, and keep going and keep your faith. We don't know loads about him. I think it is fair to say we obviously did a bit of a special on him before the League Cup final when we went over to Cork, and you know, with the way that his old teammates and coaches spoke about him, you know, very little seemed to bother him, you know, at all. They described him as cool as the breeze, which is quite poetic, I think.
Just to clarify, the breeze in Ireland is pretty cool.
Taylor is in fucking Cork, let me tell you. So there we are. And so, that's how he describes it. So I think he'd be calm. I mean, sometimes you wonder whether he's a little bit too calm in certain situations. So, you know, I think, you know, you would have liked, you know, having some of the defending from set pieces, I think Alisson would have been going, like, come on, lad, seriously, let's sort of get a grip here a little bit. So, you know, sometimes he can be sort of too calm, but I do think it helps him. In instances like this, I don't think you'd be having too many sleepless nights going into it, and you know, we'd just be hoping for, you know, a better result, better game, and a clean sheet.
There's a weird paradox, isn't there, Mike, with this, where, I mean, this from my perspective, in so much as that, as much as we want to go into tomorrow and not concede any chances and dominate and win 3 and 4, weirdly the best thing that might actually could happen is that the Cueva's called into action early and makes a really good save, because instantly you're just like, right, I'm on it.
Yeah, I think he needs to make a big save. I want him to have a moment in the game where he feels like he's contributed to us winning the game. Like, it's likely that he's not going to be called into action much, but I think for him, just making that one big save where it's like, yeah, I did that for the team, where maybe we're leading 1-0, for example, they have a moment in the game where they counter on us, and he's able to stand up and be tall for us, would be big for him. But I think on Kelleher as well, I think Dan Morgan wrote a really good piece about this before the Anfield Wrap on Kelleher, and the general theme was he's earned our patience. And I think, generally speaking, he hasn't let us down too much. I can't recall a game where it's gone against us because of Kelleher, right? So we've dropped points in the game or we've been knocked out of a competition because of Kelleher. He's generally never really let us down. I think this is the first time I can remember there are question marks about his quality as a goalkeeper. Because generally the conversation before has been like, oh my gosh, he's such a good backup goalkeeper. We can't lose him. You know, we shouldn't sell him all of this stuff. So I think obviously football fans are football fans and can be fickle at times, but I do hope that we get behind him as well more than anything. And his teammates are obviously behind him. Van Dijk and the others will be behind him, I'm sure. But yeah, a big save tomorrow would help. But also let's stay behind him because we have got a good goalkeeper there.
Yeah, 100%. So because we start at the back, we'll just move slightly further up. There was Jürgen was asked about Trent Alexander-Arnold's position in the team. And Jürgen done that thing where he said, well, I'm not going to talk about it, and then spoke about it for about 5 minutes, which is as
love when he does that.
I know. But, I mean, John, what did you make of the chat around it and, you know, his thoughts on it?
What it seemed to me, Andy, and you guys might disagree, but it seemed to me like he's saying there isn't a big rush to decide, or if we have decided to sort of make an announcement on it. I think, you know, he talks about, you know, he said, listen, I'm not stubborn. I'm not saying he's going to be a fullback forever or he's never going to be a midfielder. He says, we know we can play in midfield. And I think it seemed to me like he was saying, we're just going to assess the situation game by game, week by week. And sometimes, like at the weekend, within a game, you might change. So we start a right back, moves into midfield, you know, gets the winning goal from there. And so I don't think Jürgen sees it as a massive deal. And I think it's one of these things that he gets asked about. And I think the reason he gets sort of frustrated is that he thinks, he knows that Trent's got a lot of freedom and he's got more freedom than ever, sort of wherever he's playing, really. So it's like he's going to be doing midfieldy things. Whether we're playing him sort of right back or in the midfield, you know, he's got license to cut inside, he's got license to roam, to join into play, and you know, he is almost a playmaker within this side now, within a structure. And listen, some games he needs to be a little bit more disciplined than others, of course, but most weeks he's going to be able to assess the game and use his game intelligence, and the manager will trust him to do that and maybe tweak it where necessary. So I don't think, it doesn't seem to me from listening to Jürgen, there's going to be this big announcement at some point that maybe people are waiting for. Like, now he is a central midfielder. I think it's going to be a gradual evolution over time, you know, maybe morphing into something else. He might end up going back and just whatever the team needs, really. And, you know, whatever's best for his development and the team is, it seems to me like what the manager will do.
So, I'm with you 100% on that, but one thing that occurred to me reading it and just the general chat around Trent in general is that if it was Guardiola maybe doing this with one of his fullbacks who was from Portugal, he'd be getting, both the player and the manager would be getting more credit for being innovative, whereas there seems to be this conversation around Trent, maybe it's because of the England squad and when he never made it, and because Gareth Southgate's playing him in there. You know, it's just like a scab that people keep picking on, when really it should be testament to the player's quality.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Trent ultimately dominates football discourse in a way that not many players do. And I think it's a testament to his quality as a player. Like, Trent is just a phenomenal player. Like, the technique under pressure for the fourth goal, the winning goal on Sunday, that is immense. That is literally Steven Gerrard-esque. You know, we don't see many players produce those moments under pressure. You know, so that's why he dominates discourse, right? Because I think there's a general acceptance that this guy is a phenomenal footballer, and he's so talented. We've not seen a right back with that technical ability ever, literally ever. Like, Dani Alves, as much as I adore him, fantastic player, but he can't pass like Trent does. Trent plays passes that literally I've seen four or five players in my lifetime play off both feet, you know. So that's why it's like, well, should he be a right back, should he be a midfielder? I think the reason the manager's a bit like, come on, this again, is because he knows that all of this chat about Trent is in some ways a chat about England. It's a chat about the national team, because the manager, Southgate, has played him in midfield and has basically said to Trent, look, that's your way in for us. You know, if you want to play for England, you're going to play in midfield. So some of the questions about, oh, well, what about Liverpool? It's like, oh, so if the manager for England thinks he can play in midfield, what about you? And you played him in midfield the other day. So I think, look, there's no pressure on us to move him into midfield. This is a footballer that has shown us in the last year that he can play multiple roles. He can play in midfield if we need him to. He can play at right back and invert if we need him to. He can be the up and down right back he was for the first part of his career at Liverpool. He can be all of those things. I don't think there's any pressure on us. But I think we as fans also, like, in some ways have to accept that he will dominate discourse because he's just that good. Like, he's probably, for me, one of England's top two or three players, you know, in terms of a pure ability. He's definitely in that company. And I think one thing I would say about the credit thing you mentioned there, Andy, is there is a lot of misreading about what Jurgen Klopp is. Jurgen Klopp's seen as this real passionate man who just pumps his chest and shouts at his players and they go out and perform for him. But he's far more than that. This is a man who's meticulously crafted one of the best football teams ever. A team that got 99 points, a team that got 97 points, were unfortunate to not win the league, win the Champions League that year. This is a tactician. The only reason he doesn't get called a tactician is because he's not Spanish or Portuguese, as you mentioned. Genuinely, if he was Spanish or Portuguese, we were talking about what a revolutionary manager he is, playing Trent Alexander-Arnold inverted in midfield, then playing him as a six, then playing him as an eight sometimes, then bringing him back to right back. We'll be talking about how amazing he is in terms of reading the game. So there is a lot of that. And I think ultimately, people need to realize that Jurgen Klopp has been on a journey as a manager for the last 7-8 years, where when he came to Liverpool, he was very much the high-pressing intensity manager. And that still is part of his identity. But more than that, this is a manager that loves football. He's learned a lot. And the team he has now is very different from the team he had, you know, when he first started. It's a team that can play really good football. We have technical midfielders like, you know, Szoboszlai, Gravenberch, McAllister's a number six, which is by design. He wants him as a number six. Like, that's not like he's ended up there. So this is a manager who has shown tactical flexibility. He can remold players. He can transform teams. So he is a tactician and he deserves more credit for that. It's really annoying that he's just deemed this kind of passion merchant who pumps his chest and shouts at players, because he's far more than that, as we know.
John, Mike makes a really good point about Trent when he mentioned the goal. And, you know, there's two things for me here. It's one, the maturity of him in the last couple of minutes of the game, when the temperature, I mean, we were there, the temperature was like boiling points. To have that calmness and assuredness to take it down and not just lash at it, because your temptation is just to smash it as quick as you can. But not only that, and I want to talk about that, but also you talk about where his position is. He's playing inside left forward.
Yeah. Yeah, and he has got that freedom, and that's why I think, you know, all this talk of position and stuff can be kind of a little bit, you know, almost kind of futile, really, because, you know, you see him where he is popping up, you know, whether he's in midfield or right back or whatever, you see the positions he's popping up. But, you know, it's you know, it's almost, you know, he's playing his own version of total football. And, you know, like Mike says, he's able to do stuff that, you know, we very rarely see, you know, from many footballers and the strikers, you say. It actually, you know, is it gets better when you sort of see the different angles, really, because, you know, where I'm sat in the ground at the time, I'm sort of behind him, and you think, oh, he's just sort of smashed that, you know, and hoping it gets through. Whereas when you see from behind and you know, he goes for the space and he hits that space, and, you know, it's possibly the only place he can put it and score, because there are so many bodies. And so it's a brilliant strike. He's a brilliant player. The interesting thing for me, obviously, within all this is his contract. And I quite like the manager to be asked about that, if any of our journalist friends are listening, because I think it is an interesting one. It's less than 2 years now. It's not obviously panic stations yet and stuff like that, but I haven't seen or heard loads about it. And it wouldn't surprise me if part of the contract conversations, you know, is, you know, there'll obviously be, you know, salary discussions and talk about, you know, ambitions for the team and how long's the boss staying and all that. But I imagine a massive part of it is, you know, how do you see me evolving as a player, and where do you see me playing, and what is, you know, the idea for me in terms of a player. So these conversations will be going on a lot internally in terms of how do we get the best out of you. And I mean, the last week or so suggests they're doing a pretty good job between the manager, the player, and the new boots. They're doing all right, aren't they?
There's the Adidas market and Felder, that's doing Whaley's, honest to God.
Yeah. Cartwheels to work every day.
I mean, as you
like yourself, Andy, when you come in.
Oh, mate, I'm Ray of Sunshine. No, but I'm with you. I can't be doing with all the Steven Gerrard saga again, where Rick Parry's getting out of getting out of his car at Anfield, and everyone's expecting to go, oh yeah, he's going to Chelsea. He goes, oh no, he's staying now with Sound. Yeah. I mean, that was a very, very stressful period in my life.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It is the Anfield Raps Free Week. I am Neil Atkinson, and through this week, I am hoping you will hear enough to want to subscribe to the Anfield Rap. In subscribing to the Anfield Rap, what you do is you support us to be able to do many of the shows, some of which are for free, that we do over the course of the year, and to be able to do them to the best of our ability. For us, it's a pleasure and a privilege to get to represent the city from the heart of the city. That's where we do our business. And we have so many different contributors who come from right the way across the city, but also across the football landscape as well. It's a pleasure to work with them. It's a pleasure to work for you. Hopefully you'll take the opportunity to support us once this free week is finished. It's theanfieldrap.com/subscribe. It's through Patreon. It's on the apps, whether you're on Google or Apple. Please sign up.
We'll get on to Sheffield United at the moment in a moment, but he was asked very much about how important the win was at Fulham, and they were trying to get him to talk about the title race. And it's funny that Emery was asked a very similar question about the Champions League today, and it's almost as if they had the same scriptwriter, because they both went, look, it was important, but we need to do that every week. It's important every week. Just driving that home and say, and he said, ask me in April. Ask me in April. And you know, we know that managers are cagey, but do you think that's how they communicate that to the players as well? Or like, are they saying something completely different to the lads on the pitch?
I don't think there's a need for us to get carried away with the title race stuff at the moment. I think we can just calm down, really. And I think, I don't know what the manager will be saying to the players. I just can't remember the time in terms of that win, obviously. And I don't know if you guys have seen a clip of all the players doing the same knee slide at the same time in the corner. It's quite clear that win means a lot to the players, and it means a lot because they know what it can mean come May. And I'm sure players talk about it amongst themselves, but I'm not sure I think the manager's a really calm person, and I'm not sure he's saying, you know, that's a really big win for the title. I think his message is, we enter in a really intense period of the season, a period where we can put ourselves in a really strong position come the new year. Let's approach that with best of our ability. And I think that's the general message. I think the manager views the season through blocks, and I think Neil's spoken about how the manager wants us to peak twice in the season, right? And I think this is the first peak. The first peak is over this period now, where we have six games for the rest of the month, you know, six big games, some at home at Anfield, at, you know, Manchester United and Arsenal especially, the ones that stick out, Newcastle as well. And I think ultimately he wants us to hit a stride and a rhythm now where it's about winning those games and hopefully in January we're able to be like, look, you know, we've done well, we've maybe got six wins and one draw, maybe, you know, something, or seven wins, and you're able to be like, you might be 2 points clear at that point. So I think it is about approaching these blocks of games, these kind of milestones, these hurdles that, you know, being considered at every stage of a season, and then, you know, come April, then I think that's when you can talk about the title, you know. But for now, it's about providing a foundation and a platform for potential title talk come April, come May.
So we'll move on to Jürgen was asked about Chris Wilder and his return to Sheffield United. I thought it was quite funny, actually, because what I expected, and he said, I haven't got a fucking clue, to be honest. All the analysis has gone out the window. He said, we've got a general idea, but, and he made the point, well, if he's only there today and the game's tomorrow, how much can he actually do? I mean, for me, John, what would be important for Liverpool, just reading that, is like, he emphasised about how the quality that we've got. He said, you know, we're all right as well, you know. They'll be worried about what we're going to do. They're going to be worried about us flying at them. And I thought it was a really, really clever deflection. And then second on that as well, it was like, what can on the Wilder comments about how much, what can you do? To me, it was kind of thinking about it. The Sheffield United might not change tactically much, but they might go in on adrenaline and how important it is for Liverpool to get a foothold on the game, quiet the crowd down and get their authority stamped on it early.
Yeah, I think that is the key. And I think it's not an ideal situation, you know, for Liverpool. You know, they'd be much rather it sort of wasn't the case. You know, like Jürgen says, everything that is planned gone out the window. Now, as he says, you know, Chris Wilder's not going to have a huge amount of time. You know, the manager talked about how we used to play with the overlapping. I think wing-backs, he sort of used it. It was overlapping, you know, wide centre-half, see what he was doing. And it was a really interesting style and a really interesting tactical move. But, you know, he's not going to be doing that, you know, Wednesday night, because, you know, there's no time to sort of work with the players. But it's also fairly unlikely that he's just going to send them out and say, oh, just be doing what you're doing for the last fella, because they kept getting beat. And also, you know, so it's hard to sort of judge, but they are where they are for a reason. And it's not just because, I don't think the manager's necessarily a bad manager. I think, you know, they probably obviously feel like they have to swap because you sort of have to do something in these situations when you get beat 5-0 by teams who are down at the bottom with you. So, but I don't think it's one of those where there's a lot of talk of new manager bounces, and there always is. And listen, we've been hurt on these sorts of things in the past. The one that always sticks in my mind, I don't know if it was because I went to it, but was Leicester City when Craig Shakespeare sort of took over and they turned us over. And but they hadn't really turned up all season, Leicester, that year, and they'd, I guess, stop playing for the manager, if that's not too much of a sort of a cliche, really. I mean, they certainly played better that week than they had, you know, for the rest of the season up to then combined. And so, but I don't see it as one of those, really. I don't see that as the players really, you know, not playing for the manager or falling out with him and not getting on with him. And then suddenly they're going to start running mile more for another fella. I fundamentally just don't think they're very good. And I think that's the problem. They've got loads of injuries. They sold the two of the best players before the start of the season at a time where you've gone up and you're meant to be improving. And so, you know, when I speak to Sheffield United fans, you know, they're not saying to me, you know, oh, I can't believe the manager's doing this. You know, you'll always have players you'd like to be playing more and in a different way and stuff like that. But when I speak to Sheffield United fans, and, you know, I've got a couple in my family, you know, they just don't think the squad's very good. And that will still be the case on Wednesday night. And so I think Jürgen is right to focus on us. And for every Craig Shakespeare, there's, well, Ranieri when he went the other way, I do remember that one as well, when he went to Watford and I had a mild panic, and then we just went there and battered them. And he was like, I was just watching them today, to be honest with you. I was just learning their names. Chris Wilder probably sort of won't have that necessarily, but I don't think, I mean, he'll be looking to just sort of make a start tomorrow night, really, and anything that they get, you know, I think it'd surprise him as much as anyone.
So John said Sheffield United aren't very good. I mean, we sometimes, most of the time, are actually very, very good, and you'd think that we just have too much for them. And there was an interesting question made today about, he was asked about none of the front three getting on the score sheet in the game the other day. I thought Jürgen's response was really good. He said, well, hang on a minute, two of the goals were down to what the strikers did. And it also speaks to, there's a line about Mo Salah. He said, you know, Mo's on 200 goals, but he lays it off for Endo. And that speaks to maybe the unity they feel they've got in the squad now, where, you know, they will dig each other out. And that kind of camaraderie going into a game where the first 10, 15 could be a little bit hot can only stand them in good stead.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, the points on the fours is really interesting, because they wouldn't score every week, but thankfully we've got goals all over this team, and we've got a player like Trent Alexander-Arnold who can step up and produce moments. We've got players like, you know, Van Dijk from a set piece, maybe, who knows. I think the beauty of this team is, yes, the front five, six players are extremely potent, but then there are goals across this team, and I think there is a real unity in this team. And again, the celebration, I'm going to keep referencing it just because I think it is a sign of that unity, right? They all go together in that corner, they're all celebrating with the fans, and I think the best Jürgen Klopp teams have had this spirit, had this unity of digging each other out. And I think you often see teams that come back have a level of unity, you know, have a level of togetherness, because they are fighting for each other. So it wouldn't surprise me if at some point in the season, again, we have a late comeback, we have another football miracle, because this team will fight for each other no matter what. And I think it is important we fight, as you say, Andy, because these next two away games, away at Sheffield United and away at Palace, will be tough. And I think our away form hasn't been good enough this season. You know, there's loads of context you can apply. Of course, you can apply context with Tottenham and, you know, with the Chelsea game, perhaps, and some of the other games that we played away from over City. Yeah, City, and it's always going to be a tough game. But we do need to, especially the teams in the bottom 10, we do need to have a better record against them. The Luton game was disappointing, and I think we need more intensity, we need more desire, we need more fight from the team and more quality in the games we have coming up. So, yeah, I think that togetherness will stand us in good stead for this kind of fixture run. And for togetherness as well, I think it's crucial over this period where more players in the squad are going to be involved. So you're going to see Endo start the odd game. You might see Elliot start the odd game. You're going to see Gakpo start the odd game. These players who haven't started maybe as much as they would like will play more games. So the togetherness in terms of everyone's in this together during this run, it couldn't be more important.
You mentioned the squad there, Mike. And what another line stuck out for me there, he was actually beginning to address the question about Trent, and he was talking about the amount of games and who can play where, and he mentioned Tsimikas, and I was quite surprised because he said Kostas can't play every game. We have to think about Connor and one thing and the other, and you know, it's dead easy to say, oh, well, you can't take Sheffield United lightly, you got to go strong, but then you'd say that going into every game, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
So was he hinting, John, at maybe a bit of rotation that we're not expecting, and do you think that might be a bit of a risk and just get this game out the way and wait for one at home where maybe you can do a little bit more?
I think he feels that he can rotate and still be strong, and he was sort of quite clear on that with really, and I agree with him. I think there's games where, you know, we've swapped 8 and 9 and struggled a little bit, but then there's others where I think we've played well. I think, you know, he wouldn't surprise me if he's looking at, you know, this bank of games, like Mike was saying before, and maybe thinking, well, if I can do, you know, 3 and almost each one really and keep it fresh, but also sort of stay strong. It doesn't feel to me there'll be sort of one big game. You know, the Union SG will be another thing, but it doesn't feel like there'll be a league game or even the League Cup one where, you know, you're suddenly seeing whole changes for that and then sort of back in. I think he'll just try and, you know, be bringing people in and out and just keeping people, you know, as fresh or at least not as not fatigued as possible, really. And so, yeah, I think when the Liverpool squad's really good, you know, you look at a team and think, oh, that's good. And then someone says, oh, it's 4 changes. And you're like, oh, is it? Do you know what I mean? You're always kind of surprised, really. But then you count them up and yeah, there they are. You know, they'll certainly be one because Matip's not going to play. So Konate, you know, will come in and I expect Gakpo to play. And then maybe sort of one in midfield as well. And then,
Elliot, maybe.
Yeah, or you could make a Jones argument, or you could even make an Endo argument, you know, or throw in one if you need a goal. And so it's the situation now where, you know, he'll feel the more players he's got confidence in, the better, really. And I think that that's where he's at. And you know, you can rotate, the top teams can rotate more as well. And so why would you not make the most of that in this busy period where, you know, the smaller the squad, the harder it is. You know, why would you not take a bit of an advantage over someone else to be fresher with almost as equally a strong team?
So we started the show at the back. I'm going to end up at the front. Is the final question at the press conference he was asked about Mo Salah. And he talked him up. He just said, you know, he doesn't think he'll ever coach a player who'll get those kind of numbers again. You know, exceptional player all time, great, no shadow of a doubt. Now, my question is to the Perriers, was he just being nice or was he buttering them up for when they do the announcement day when him, Trent and Mo all sign the new contracts, Mike?
I bloody hope so. I want Mo Salah to stay at Liverpool forever. Him, Trent, all the good lads, stay forever, please. So yeah, I hope it is a case of buttering them up for that big announcement that's going to hopefully come soon. For maybe a nice Christmas present for us all before Christmas, who knows?
John, just to wrap up on it, on a serious note though, I don't think you can understate how important Mo has been to this man, to this football club, to this manager, and you know, the numbers are there to see, and they're phenomenal. And you know, I personally don't think he gets enough credit, and it's nice to see the manager push that.
Yeah, I mean, he said he's, you know, he's one of the best players I've ever coached and maybe ever will be. And you know, so it's great that he's sort of looking into the future on that as well. I think he just feels that, you know, he's he's bought some good players, Jürgen, hasn't he? And he's had a few good ones bought for him as well. Jürgen Klopp has come out in the past and said that Mo Salah was a suggestion from other parts of the recruitment team that he was happy to have. And, you know, tis the season and all that. What a gift. You wouldn't mind Mo Salah under your Christmas tree, would you? And Jürgen Klopp got him, albeit one summer. And I think he just probably feels that what an incredible gift he is. And, you know, we talked about his numbers. And I think if he was asked, you know, to talk about them all, and I think, included in those numbers are just the number of games he plays. Like, his availability is just absolutely phenomenal. And going into, again, a busy festive period where you want to be keeping everyone fit. And Mo Salah hardly ever gets injured and always is available and looks ready to contribute. You know, we're talking about rotation, but if you were able to rotate Mo, you wouldn't necessarily worry about it because he's in such phenomenal shape and he always contributes, even when he's having a game where, you know, I didn't think he was great at the weekend by his high standards, but, you know, he still obviously gets the end of assists and lays two pretty much on a plate for Darwin Núñez, the one who hits the bar and then the one which he headers into him and he makes a bit of a mess of it. And so even when he's not on it, he's creating and making things happen and very often scoring goals. And so all those contribute to these numbers that the manager's referring to and contribute to his genius and contribute to the epic contribution that he makes to Liverpool. And like Mike says, will continue to make, you know, if he's allowed for years and years to come.
We can talk about epic contribution. He goes into the game on 199. Is tomorrow night or tonight, as it's going out in the morning, the night where he bags number 200?
I think it is, yeah. I think he'll do it. I think Jürgen was quite clever to sort of, you know, to try and take the pressure off a little bit and also point out, you know, that it's not hanging over him too much. Like, you know, if he was stressing about it, then he wouldn't have set up those chances that I've just talked about. And so Jürgen's saying, you know, he's still doing all this. But I think milestones are important to Mo, and I think they're important to most players. And we've seen plenty of times in lots of different sports in the past when you've got a big one sort of coming up, you know, you can maybe get a bit twitchy or nervous or play the game in a sort of slightly different way. So sooner happens the better. But yeah, I think it'll come against Sheffield United. And, you know, you went back into to be, you know, getting over it and beyond it and on 201 and on the march to 300.
I thought, you know, that was my first thought, Mike, just before we wrap this up. I think it was either Owen or Fowler were like stuck on 99 or 199 and whatever it was for like 4 or 5 games, and then they bagged a hat trick to break the seal. So are you backing him tomorrow?
I'm backing him heavily. I think he'll score at least a couple of goals. I think he's due a performance like that away from home where he puts the sword to the team and really dominates the game. So I'm going to back him to score 2 goals. And if he scores the 200th, maybe take his top off as well. He loves that, doesn't he? So the top might come off and he might have a yellow card, but 2 goals. I think he'll take that.
Sops off with Mo. That's been Press Conference Expert. Thank you so much, John Gibbons, Mike Bancall, and we'll see you before the next game. Thank you. Sports Social Podcast Network.